You're about to begin a new sugya. It's actually really the next two sugyas, which in a certain sense have nothing to do with Masechah Sukkah. I mean, they do a lot to do with Masechah Sukkah, but they really got kind of snuck into Masechah Sukkah a little bit derech agav, because the Gemara is now analyzing the Machlekes, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, about whether a sukkah above 20 amos is kasher or not. And the Gemara begins with a fascinating proof that Rabbi Yehuda brings to his opinion, the opinion that in the end we don't really accept, but it brings a fascinating, I guess you can call it a historic proof, that a sukkah above 20 amos would be ksheira, and the Rabbanan's response to Rabbi Yehuda's proof, and that give and take between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about a certain event that had happened preceding both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim's generation, becomes the background for several fascinating sugyas that touch a little bit of Masechah Sukkah, but begin to branch out as well. So we take a look at the first of the Rambam Kumos in Sukkah, Nabez, and Rebez. So Meisvei, Sukkah Shigavoa L'malam Yesim Amma Psula. So the Sukkah is above 20 Amos, it's Psula. This is the first view of the Tanakam in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir Abor Mechamishim Amma. Rabbi Yehuda permits it even up to 40 or 50 Amos. So when the Gemara uses this phrase, until 40, 50, that's just a Loshen Guz, but just a way of speaking, it really means it's good no matter what. There is no maximum height to the Sukkah. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda's proof. Ma'isa b'Hilni Hamalka b'Lud. It happened with Queen Hilni. Queen Hilni. Hilni Hamalka was a fascinating character in the days of the Tanoim. She was actually a Gioris. She was originally a non-Jewish woman who converted. The Gemara has a story about how she became a Nazira. And there was all complications with her bringing her Kabbalas in the base of Mikdash. And she had a lot of other assorted things. The Mishnah in Yuma tells about some of the things that she dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, and then the Mishnah speaks about some of the things that some of her children dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. So she was a fascinating person, again, before the days of Rabbi Yehuda. So Ma'ase b'Hilni Hamalka b'Lud. The one time it happened, the Hilni Hamalka was in Lud. And she had a sukkah. I imagine she had quite a royal sukkah. So it was above 20 amos. And there's a Kainim were visiting her. They were coming to visit her on Yontif. She was a big friend. She was Jewish. She was a big friend of the Chachamim. So she would she was having an open house on Sukkah. So the Chachamim were visiting her. And lo and behold, the Sukkah was well above 20 Amos. And nobody said anything. So Rabbi Yehuda says, here we have a clear-cut tradition. There was a story that Tamir Chacham in that generation, the previous generation, had been visiting Queen Hilni, and the sukkah was, according to your standards, not acceptable. And nobody said boo, nobody said a word. It must be that I'm right, says Rabbi Yehuda, that the sukkah was in fact kshera. So Amulo, so the Chachamim responded back to Rabbi Yehuda. They have all the facts are right. There was a Hilni Amalcha, and she did sit in a big sukkah, and nobody said anything to her. But your conclusion, why they didn't say anything to her, because the sukkah was kshera, was not the correct conclusion. Amulo Misham Raya. The reason why they didn't say anything to her is because she was ptur from sukkah anyway, because she was a woman, and sukkah is a mitzvah seishas man grama, and therefore women are pturos. So this is a classic example that sometimes, you know, when people see a story, they see a rabbi Ploni did something, it must be for the following reason. It's not necessarily correct. The Gemara says in the Gittim HaSechus Chulin that if you want to bring a raya from a story that a certain rav did something, and you want to bring that as a proof la halacha, so the Gemara says you have to be a real, real, real expert to understand the nuances. What you have to interpret what you saw. So just because you think the reason is such and such, it may not be correct. So that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham are finding out now, is how to interpret what happened. Everyone agrees to the facts. She was sitting in a sukkah above 20 amos. Everyone agrees to the facts that nobody corrected her. And now they're having a machlekes. What conclusion can we draw? Rabbi Yehuda concluded the sukkah is kshayra, and the Chacham says that's not true. So the Rabbi Yehuda continues his proof. He says, no, that's not a good refutation of my proof. So in the middle of the third line, Amal Hanra Beauty responded back to the Chachamim, fellow Shiva Banim Havula. She had seven sons. So she had seven sons. You can't explain to me anymore that the sukkah was not acceptable and she was only a woman and therefore nobody corrected her. What about her seven sons? And the ode, and in addition, Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol Ma'aseh La'osta El Api Chachamim. Everything that this woman did, she would always ask the rabbi. She always consulted with the Rabbanim before she did anything. So the Gemara wants to know what the meaning of that double refutation is. First, Rabbi Yehuda says back to the Chachamim that she had seven sons, and then the Rabbi Yehuda says back to the Chachamim, by the way, she asked Shilas before she did everything. So, Lamali Lemeste Ve'od Kol Ma'aseh La'osteh El Api Chachamim. Why does Rabbi Yehuda have to respond with a double response? So, Hachi Ka'amalu, he meant as follows. Ki Tom Rubanim Ketanim Hayu. That Rabbi Yehuda is already anticipating the Chachamim's refutation of his of his second proof. So again, you have to make sure you get the flow of the conversation. So Rabbi Yehuda starts off by saying, Pilni Amalka sat in the sukkah above 20 amas, and nobody said a word. Must be that's Kshera. The Chum said that. She was a woman, therefore nobody said anything. So Rabbi Yehuda said, but she had sons. So Rabbi Yehuda is expecting the Chum to say, the sons must have been under bar mitzvah. If the sons were under bar mitzvah, then once again, they would have their same, you know, disproof of the proof. They would say, well, they're under bar mitzvah, so they're Pturim anyway. So maybe you, the Rabbanim, this is Rabbi Yehuda speaking, maybe you, the Rabbanim, are going to say to me, Ki tom Rabbanim ketanim hayu, uktanim Pturim in HaSukkah. So Rabbi Yehuda already anticipated the Chacham's response. Cave in the Shiva Havu, she had seven sons. Yevshut lo havi buchach in a tzorch le'imo. One of them must have reached the age of chinuch in order to be chayv in sukkah, at least min the Rabbanim. The din is that until a person is by mitzvah, they're not chayv in sukkah min ha-Torah. But once they reach the age of chinuch, they are. What's the age of chinuch for sukkah? So the Gemara later on in Masechet Sukkah says that the age appropriate, the stage of chinuch, is different for each mitzvah. How do you know whether a person's reached the age of begin chinuch for sukkah? So the Gemara says, eino tzorach le'imo. What does that mean? It means he goes through the night, he gets go to sleep, go to a sleepover, he doesn't wake up in the middle of the night, hysterical, looking for his mother. So if he's old enough to sleep basically outside the sukkah by himself, or with his father, he's not going to get a little nervous. So then he's chayv in the mitzvah sukkah mid the rabbanim. So the Rabbi Yehuda made a chesh, but he said she had seven sons, unless she had seven tuplets, so two sets of triplets or something, it's highly unlikely that one of them hadn't already reached the age of a year l'chinuch. So that would have been a good enough proof, since one of the sons is probably Gil Echinuch, and she's sitting in the sukkah above 20 amas, and nobody's correcting her. It must be a riot that the sukkah is Kshera. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda anticipated, that the Chum are going to have another response. V'chi teimru katan shen etzach liba midrabanu midmechayiv, vi midrabanu lamashkecha. Maybe Hilni Amaka was a very nice deraisidika lady, but she wasn't so concerned with the dinim derabanan. So Toshma, that's the proof. Oh, koma selost el apicha chomim. No. She did everything. She was an observant Jew. She kept deraisis and derabanan, and if her child was chayav and chinuch, she would have made sure that the sukkah was kshera. From the fact that the sukkah was above 20 amas, and nobody said a word, nobody fixed it, nobody corrected her, and she would have been so easy to correct, because she used to love to ask the shaylas all the time, you see from here that sukkah was perfectly 100% kshera. And the Chacham are visiting her, nobody saying anything. A proof positive, says Rabbi Yehuda, that the sukkah must be kshera. Now, we don't know what the Chacham's final word was. I'm going to explain a little bit later what the Chacham's potential response back to Rabbi Yehuda was. But for our purposes, we just want to isolate this point of the sugya, that there is a notion of chinuch for sukkah, that we know that's going to be later on in sukkah. And we know that the sons of Hilni Amalko was subject to the dinim of chinuch. And since they were subject to the dinim of chinuch, that's a proof positive that the sukkah must have been kosher. That was Rabbi Yehuda's argument. Again, the Chum had some kind of response that which we're not even sure what that response was. But at least at this point, we can extract from the sugya that chinuch is a factor, not min haTorah, but min derabbanan. And therefore, the sukkah, according to Rabbi Yehuda's version, must have been a kosher sukkah to fulfill the notion of chinuch.
She had a husband who was alive.
Oh, the Gemara does not fill us in who else was part of the Hilni Amach extended family. So that piece of information is a critical halachic piece of information as the sugya is going to develop. The Gemara doesn't say, we don't know who Mr. Hilni was, one way or the other, but we have to find out.
Because she
may not have a chiyuv to be a chayv. That's the direction. Chinuch besukah Hilni Amach, that's exactly the direction that we're heading in. Was there really a din of chinuch here altogether, the absence of a father, maybe the presence of a father? That's exactly where we're going to go. Just as a total aside, I was wondering, just yesterday, I was talking over the sugi a little bit, the shiur they're doing the first pack of sukkahs, or some of the shiurim are, and actually we're right a little bit past the sugya, but one of the shiurim was still holding me, so we were pilpling a little bit, one of the other rabbi, and we were talking a little bit about the sugya. And I just threw out a question, just almost like an external, tangential question to the sugya, is that the lashon of the b'raisa is very strange. The phrase, the chnasim v'yaitzim, is a very temporary kind of a lashon. It almost gives the phrase like, we're coming, we're going, we're coming, we're going. Nobody sat down, nobody joined up. It's a chosh of a woman. If it was a 20 amma tall sukkah, it must have been a pretty big sukkah. Must have been, I don't want to give any show, any frame to any hotels in Yerushalayim, but I imagine, I don't know if you want to give him a Waldorf sukkah, I don't know, whatever. It must have been one of the high class sukkahs that Hilni Amalka is sitting in. And all the Chum are coming, and the Chum had a good working relationship with her, and she would always hear shailas. You would expect she would have an open house, she would be given a kibbutz, and the lashon nichnasim v'yaitzim sounds a little bit not that way. And for keret, it sounds in the sugya that none of the rabbanim ate anything in the sukkah, because if the rabbanim would have been eating in the sukkah, that would have been a proof positive. We're pilpling with a she ate in the sukkah, we're pilpling with our sons, the chayiv, the right. Why didn't the Gemara say that? For the fact that the Chachmei Ador were all there, they were all joining up for the open house on the first day of Tiv, it must be a raya that the sukkah was ksheira. And some of you get the impression that nobody's eating in the sukkah. So just, again, I wouldn't lose that much sleep up. It's already 6:30 in the morning.
Like a shkocha a little bit.
That nobody ate.
But no, it sounds like
Mashkiach. You know, interesting. How many chacham did you need to be nichnas v'yaitze? How many is Canaan? You know, usually the Mashkiach, but not the Zikne Hador. You know, the Mashkiach, the guy in the back was checking the, you know.
To see if, you know, things were going, if she was doing it the right way.
Okay, maybe.
This whole answer, if you visit your rabbi,
you're heading in my direction. That you're starting to lead me in the direction. So all of a sudden, yesterday, I'll tell you exactly why, the wheel started to turn in my head. That maybe the Zekadim who came to visit her, maybe held that they were parted from the sukkah. Maybe they held that the sukkah didn't have to be kosher for their standards, because maybe they were coming in a situation where they would be parted from sukkah. Why would anybody dream they would be part of sukkah? So those who were in Meshul over Yom Tov, they started to connect the dots. That Machon Pnei HaMelech. So it's a big question. If a person goes to visit the king on Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed, are they chayav in sukkah or not? Why would a person think that you're potter? So Machon Pnei Rabbo is potter in a sukkah. That's a Ferish Mishnah, Ferish Gemara. Machon Pnei HaMelech or Pnei HaMalka, why would one think that one's potter? So the Gemara says in the third Berakh of Maseches Brachos that there's a mitzvah, let's say it's the Kras HaMalachim, there's a mitzvah of Kavod HaMalchus to go and greet the Malachim. And the Gemara says that even if it's a non-Jewish king, there's a mitzvah, let's say, today, a Melech, even a Goyish king, Kedesh Yavchin, Bein Melech Shalom, and Melech Shalom. Because when Melech HaMashiach comes, so you'll have a reference point. You'll be able to appreciate, this is what they did for the Goyish king, this is the great covenant of God. Wow, wait till Ben David comes, the Melech HaMashiach comes, I'm going to really, really appreciate what Malchus Yisroel, what Malchus Beis David is. So the Gemara and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch use the phrase, mitzvah letzei sedei melochem, afilu malchei akum. So all of a sudden my wheels of a yontif were working very hard on this. And I was thinking that maybe if a person goes to visit a Melech, even a non-Jewish king, maybe that Taka Potter, Potter min asukha, because the din is Eisek min mitzvah, Potter min a mitzvah. If I'm going to do a mitzvah, so I'm not mechifti in the sukha. And if I'm a derech, do a mitzvah, Potter min asukha. Why in the world dafka this yontif, of all yontif, the wheel's turning? Because I got a frantic call on Erev Yontif, the following shayla. One of my Tamidim was involved in this group. There was a certain group of youngsters who were already, some of them over the age of bar mitzvah, who were invited to go spend some time in the White House on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. It was a sad situation. There were a group from Chai Lifeline, and they were invited to the White House, spend a little time there, and the plan was they were supposed to eat lunch with the president. So I get a frantic call an hour before Yom Tov. Last we checked, there's no sukkah on the premises of the White House. Candy, and it wasn't just the kids themselves. There were advisors that were going. Some parents were invited to come along. There was a whole entourage that were going to spend the day of Chol HaMoed in the White House. And no sukkah around. Do they have a right to eat lunch out of the sukkah? Do they have to explain to Mr. Trump that they can only eat potato chips and popcorn out of the sukkah? What's the deal? So I thought to myself, all of a sudden, maybe we can find the hatter. I said, maybe this is called the mitzvah of Holoch the Kras HaMalachim. The melech doesn't have to be an absolute melech, and in the fullest sense means the president for these purposes is probably as a din of a melech. So it's mitzvah let's say Shadeh HaMalachim, the Kras HaMalachim. So I was thinking to myself that, well, maybe that's good enough, that since a person has Isaac the mitzvah, so Isaac the mitzvah fought the mina mitzvah. So that was the theory. So we gave a whole shiur about it on the first days in Yom Tov to try to defend why this is a good enough mitzvah. And then we weren't sure, it's only a mitzvah derabbanan. Maybe Rabbi Chana says maybe a mitzvah deraisin to be fought that back. A whole people all lumped us about the shayla. Anyway, at the end of the day, the shayla was moot because the president's schedule changed, and they ended up, they did go to the White House, but they went bowling, I think, with the Kushners, if I'm not mistaken. So you're allowed to bowl outside the sukkah. Chol HaMoed, yesh lahakal, I don't think they were serving them a whole meal. Popcorn and soda you can have out of the sukkah, even if you're bowling in Chol HaMoed, b'shas al-chak. So not only b'shas al-chak, so the whole shayla, I guess all's well that ends well, except we never got the pasuk in the Shalom Bill. But my idea was that I really thought that they were potter. And so I did tell them that Lefinia's night, I think that they're really potter. So, yeah, so that was another question. Cholim, but the problem is, didn't it? I asked them, I said, one of you would take this kid to the Bronx Zoo on Chol HaMoed. So they said, oh, we'd eat in the sukkah. It means they're not like Mishas Maisa Cholim. Well, Holchei Derech is another Shalom. Is that enough of a Holchei Derech to be potter? That's
She's a woman,
so she's up to it.
But if it was a man that was chayiv, and you go to visit,
and he's sitting in the sukkah, right? So he's sitting in the sukkah.
So that would change the whole.
So that's a shaila.
She's the perfect example.
So that's a machloek. The machloek is ties in the rav. Let's say I'm holding across my rav. I'm going to visit my rebbe on Chol HaMoed, and the rebbe's chayiv in the sukkah. Am I chayiv in the sukkah? So the commission says beferish holding across rav was part of the sukkah. So as machloek is ties in the rav, does that mean because I'm having difficulty finding a sukkah? And if I go ahead and I drez a chavrum, look for a sukkah, I won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah. So doing the sukkah is going to interfere with the mitzvah of l'hakol pnei rabba. That's what Tosfos learns. But if I could do both without detracting from the mitzvah, so Tosfos writes, I'm chayav ben atar, to do the sukkah. And the Ran says no. The Ran says that be'ikir adin, even if it's not going to trap, the sukkah's right there. I'm about to walk in to visit my rabbi, and the sukkah's 2 feet away. The Ran says, you're not mechuyif. Your job is to go visit your rabbi. I see it's a part of the mitzvah. I feel after the Kaim Shneim. The Ran says, as a Midas Chasidus, it's a nice thing if you can, it won't take any time. And why not? Mios Tov HaTikra Ra, the Ran writes. But Mikra Din, you would be potter under those circumstances. Anyway, so fascinating a Shaila. So when Rabbi Shechta was talking to Shaila, also he thought more of the Svar, like Ari saying, more of the Hochei Drachim kind of a Shaila. Hochei Drachim is a tricky Sugi Masecha Sukha when you apply, when you don't. So it could be that combination of Hochei Drachim, but I was convinced it would have been sufficient to be mad to this. But the Lamais, the whole Shaila was a moot Shaila anyway. But since it was on my mind, so I started to think, ooh, Hilmi Hamalka. What exactly was her royalty? Where exactly was she queening over exactly at that time? I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. You have to check the history books.
Wikipedia, actually, when you're talking to.
Oh, yeah.
They say, you know, yeah. I'm from Assyria.
Right, right. She was from Assyria.
She married her brother.
But she was good. I mean, she was not Jewish.
No, I think she...
Converted.
I don't it doesn't say it, but...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if her husband was Jewish. I mean, it's not, you know, she's Assyrian. She's not, you know.
No, but eventually she converted. The Gemara says
that
she converted.
It says that she converted.
You converted to become, yeah, and then her sons were, one of her sons was Munbaz HaMelech, if I'm not mistaken. So the Gemara talks about them, Mishnahis talk about them. Yeah, she was an interesting personality. Again, you know, the thing with Wikipedia is, it's only as true as the person who's putting up the information, so you're never really sure whether it's true. Yeah.
Qualified,
yeah, yeah, anyway, okay, whatever. Anyway, so a fascinating story. So that's when my wheels were turning. But yesterday, my wheels started to turn on another aspect of the story. So how come nobody else sat down to eat with us? Maybe I'll cross a Melech. All of a sudden, it dawned on me. I have to say, I am in many, many ways, I'm not at the daraga of the Vilna Gaon. But they say with the Vilna Gaon that sometimes when he would get like a flash of a Torah thought at a time when he really shouldn't be having it, so he wouldn't write it down. Like if he would get it before Birchas Torah or in the middle of davening, that's not. So yesterday, this flash came to me in the middle of Mincha. So sometimes that's just the way it happens. In the middle of doing something, and all of a sudden, you know, the inspiration comes. So Pug yesterday, because I was thinking about it before Mincha. That's why the Gemara says that you're not supposed to daven mitoch dvar halacha. You're supposed to only daven mitoch dvar halacha psuka. You're supposed to say a quick, you know, a simple, straightforward halacha that you don't have to think about too much. Then you go daven. The Gemara says you shouldn't. I'm not encouraging people not to come to the Shia. That's why we end. We give 5 minutes for people to calm down. So by the time they start davening, they're ready. That's why we say psuka nizimra. That's the reason why we share right. We say psuka nizimra to get our minds out of our pupil, to make sure that all the people come to Shia before Shachrus. So yesterday I finished here at 2:28 and I ran to Mincha 2:30. So my mind was still turning. So all of a sudden it dawned on me that the Gemara tells us where the story was. The story was in Lud. Why is that important? Also, it was near the airport. Well, my nafkamina, where the story was. So Lud was the town of Rabbi Eliezer. He was the Mar Asra of Lud. And the Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos that people in his town followed his psochim, even though very often Rabbi Elazar was at Das Yochanan and many things. But in the other Chum didn't follow him. In his town, Chosman, there wasn't paskind against him. So the Gemara tells in Shabbos that they used to follow his menhagim. So one of the sheetas, which was at Das Yochanan, the minority view of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, a unique sheet in the second paragraph of Sukkah, that you have to stay in the same Sukkah the whole week of Sukkahs. And you're not allowed to jump around. You can't go, I'll eat lunch over here, I'll eat supper over here, I'll go Sukkah hopping over here, I'll go to Chol HaMoed, Sukkah fish over here. Everyone's Sukkah, Sukkah's Teshuvah, Shabbos Yom, Teshuvah, stay home, stay in your house. So Rabbi Eliezer would say that if you happen to leave your sukkah during the course of sukkahs, you can't eat in somebody else's sukkah because you can only be yotzei mitzvah of sukkah in your own sukkah. So that makes a lot of sense. Who are these Akedim? They were Rabbi Eliezer people. So Rabbi Eliezer's chaver, his tanoim, his tamidim, they refused to eat in the sukkah. Again, it's only a guess. I don't know when. I'm not sure the years actually work out because Hilni Amalka was Bizman HaMikdash and Rabbi Eliezer was a little bit before the Mikdash, a little bit after the Mikdash. So I'm not saying that's 100% accurate historically, but it was for a Shikul Torah that came in the middle of Mincha, it's good enough that I could repeat it earlier. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the bottom line is that there was clearly a chinuch taking place in the Sugya. And the question is there any mitigating factor here why chinuch should or should not have been taking place? So we have to begin in the second of the Mamakomas, a sugya maseches yevamos, kufya givam beis, that is going to impact on this sugya significantly. So Gemara tells the following story. Rav Yitzchak bar Bisna, irchasu le mafteichi de be-midrash b'shisram b'shabata. Rav Yitzchak bar Bisna, he was the Rav in town, and the keys to the beis medrash got left by mistake in the street. There was no Erev in town. So the keys to the beis medrash were left in the middle of the street, and now it's Shabbos. What are you going to do? How are you going to carry the key? How are you going to open up the beis medrash? You have to keep the shul locked for the whole Shabbos. So also the Kamei D'Rabbi Pedos. So they came in front of Rabbi Pedos to try to paskin the Shiloh. Amalei, so Rabbi Pedos said, Zil daber tali v'talia v'letailu hasam. Go and collect the little boys. Tali means little boys. Vitalia means the little girls. Go and collect some little boys and little girls and they'll play in the world. Tali, awesome. Let them play there, like a deal. Let them go play. Tell all the kids there's some fun games going on in the Shabbos afternoon groups in the street. Let them play there. Why? What's the significance of that? The imashkhlu, maisalu, because kids like keys. As we know, little babies like playing with keys. So a kid's going to see a nice glistening silver key on the floor. He's inevitably going to pick it up, and he's going to start to spazier walking around with it. Ooh, he's going to start to see. Let me show you. The three-year-old's going to tell the three-year-old, let me show you which door this opens. And if we're lucky, so the kid will open up the beis medrash for us, and we'll be able to go in and sit and learn and daven mincha. So Gemara says, that's interesting. Al mukasavu, right? Pedas must have held. Cut the neuchon nevelas and beis mitzvah lafri show. That if I see a child doing something that's wrong, eating nevelas, eating treifas, or being mechal shabbos, carrying without the eruv, Bezin doesn't have to get involved. Now, it's obvious that we didn't tell the child directly to do it. That would clearly be an awesome. The Mishnah says, you're not allowed to tell a child to do a malacha for you. But I didn't tell the child to do a malacha. I told the child to go and play in the street. The child on his own found the keys. So now we're hoping and praying that he's going to do the malacha. We're not telling him, but we're hoping he's going to do it. So that's what the Gemara says. Ein Bezin Mitzvah Fisher. We're not obligated to stop him. If you would have held like the other opinion of the Gemara in Yevamos, that Bezin Mitzvah Fisher, then this whole stunt with Rabbi Pedas and Rabbi Mishnah obviously wouldn't have worked. So that's the background of the sugya. And again, it's Machlokes in the Gemara. Rabbi Pedas clearly held the one way. There is a famous question that's asked on this Gemara, not relevant for the sugya per se, but is a rather humorous question and an even more humorous answer. The question was supposedly posed to the Satmar Rebbe. They asked him, what does the Gemara mean? They brought the Tali and the Talias. They brought the little boys and the little girls to play in the street. Is that co-ed playgroup, co-ed Shabbos groups? What's going on here? So the Satmar Rebbe responded that, if you remember from the beginning of the story, the goal was the key was somewhere on the floor, and they wanted to make sure, they couldn't tell the kids to find it. They had to make sure that the kids are going to find it. So the Satmar Rebbe responded that if you're just going to bring a bunch of boys, to bring 20 little Satmar kids from the cheder, so they're going to play with each other, they're going to throw things at each other, they're going to punch each other, they're going to battle around each other. No one's going to bother looking down and finding the key. It's going to defeat them. But if you bring the girls there, so then all the boys are going to look down, they're not going to look at the little girls, so they're missed out with someone's going to find the key. So again, I'm not sure I would have asked the kasha, I'm not sure I would have given the tennis, but it is a humorous joke out of Brooklyn. Okay, anyway, so the bottom line is, the Gemara says that you learn after the story that Ein Beis Mitzvah L'Afrishai. So Tosis gets very, very nervous about the sugya. Tosis Masechta Shabbos and Kuchof Aleph, because the sugya appears there also. This Tosis does not appear in Yevamos, it appears in Shabbos. So Tosis in the third of Mamakomis gets very, very concerned about the sugya. Tosis wants to know, how old are these kids? Are these 2-year-olds or are these 12-and-a-half-year-olds? So, or 11-and-a-half-year-old girls. So comes, tells and says, V'nira, the ma'ar b'kanshua gilachinuch. Says Tosis, there is no way that these kids are already gilachinuch. There's no way that these kids are old enough to know what's going on, and they're old enough to understand what Shabbos is. Why? To be gilachinuch. He says, once the child is a gilachinuch, kevet shechayv l'chancho, kol shechayim t'tzach l'frish l'shalas aveira. Says Tosis, if there's a mitzvah chinuch, madach I have to buy the kid a lulav, madach I have to make the kid sit in the sukkah, I have to make sure the kid hears Kiddush, but I can let him be Mechal Shabbos. I can let him carry things for me on Shabbos. So comes Tosfos and says, obviously the whole pilpul in the Gemara, the whole machlokes in the Gemara about whether Beizim Mitzuvim Lafisho and Beizim Mitzuvim Lafisho, that machlokes only applies for a child who's under the age of Chinuch. Over the age of Chinuch, what's there to talk about? There's nothing at all to discuss. So therefore, Tosfos says, because of that kasha, if it's over Chinuch, nothing to discuss, we have to change the case. We have to make it okay to Hachamai Eskina. The case is, the child is very, very young. Are there any other reasons why maybe we can almost ignore the issue of Chinuch? Tosfos was forced to give what we call an Okimta Teres. Okimta means the Gemara is only talking about a very, very unique case. Hachamai Eskina doesn't thus facts to the case. Are there other approaches to the sugya? Are there other reasons to believe that maybe Chinuch is not playing a role here? So the answer is, most probably yes. That other Rishonim have other reasons to believe that maybe Chinuch doesn't apply here. What are some of the other reasons why Chinuch doesn't apply here? So we take a look at the fifth of the Ramah Kamas. There's a Tosus Yeshanim in Masechus Yuma. Tosus Yeshanim there were several Tosus that were left out by the printers. For whatever reason, the printer ran out of room when they originally printed Shas hundreds of years ago, and they left these small Tosus out of the regular margin, out of the regular place in the page. So they felt bad, so they stuck them in the margin. So they called them the Tosus Yeshanim. In the yeshiva, sometimes they call them the Tosus Yeshanim. Tosus Yeshanim means the Bali Tosu was sleeping. The only reason why the yeshiva Bacham said is they don't know Diktuk. So they think it doesn't mean the Tosus. Maybe the Bacham was sleeping, but the Tosus weren't sleeping. They called them Tosus Yeshanim, the older Tosus. They weren't any older than the regular Tosus. They were the same people who wrote them, but the printers felt bad because they had insulted them by leaving them out. Say, oh, these are the older Bali Tosus. They get a special place on the side of the page. The whole thing was a mistake. They belong in the regular Tosus. They're the same, written by the same people. But kachava, once the printing was made, so they're stuck on the side in the margin of the Gemara. So the bottom line is, Tosus Yeshanim in Maseches Yuma is bothered with the same kasha. So Tosus, yes, if you take a look at the third line, in the middle of the line, how could the Gemara say in Yevamos and in other places that Beizim doesn't have to stop a child from doing an Aveira? We have to positively give Chinuch to kids. How could we not stop them from doing Yisurim? So the Omer ben Elazar mitzvah, Elazar mitzvah was the Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam, the Chinuch lo shayach al shiyase mitzvah lo prushim Yisurim. Ben Elazar mitzvah says, nope. The question was such, the answer is, you are wrong, that Chinuch only applies to Mitzvah Zaseh, doesn't apply to Mitzvah Lo Zaseh. So it's Pilei Ployim, what's Rabbi Lazman Mitzvah talking about? Are there Rayas for against them? What's the Svara? We need a lot of work. So hopefully we have to Shem next week when we continue the Sugya. So this Rabbi Lazman Mitzvah and then the continuation of the Tosfos Yeshanim has become the background to understanding the story of Hilna Malka in the proper way. Hopefully we'll continue next week.